I noticed a Japanese influence in here.
All Oriental influence, and you don't see it this much in there. You see it, for instance, look at the title, Tokonoma.
So you've spent a lot of time in Japan from time
I've never been to Japan. I've translated a lot of Japanese literature. I don't know a word of Japanese. I did it through English. I did it through translations that were done from Japanese to English by normally, for instance, Saigyo, the Japanese Zen monk poet of the 12th century, has a beautiful book called Mirror of the Moon. It was translated by a fellow by the name of William Lafleur, who was extraordinary and totally forgotten, but extraordinary. It was published by New Directions.
Mirror of the Moon?
Mirror of the Moon.
I'm going to write that down.
I translated that into Spanish as Espejo de la Luna. And it sold. It didn't make a penny, but I don't care. It sold. And I was literally in the Hispanic world the first. The word in Spanish is divulgador. When you become like a vehicle for things, you know? Mm. Divulgar. Make it vulgar. Make it common to everyone. Make it available. Mm. I made Japanese and Chinese literature for the first time in Spanish available in our world. And this has been acknowledged at many levels. Why this happened to me? Because I'm a genius? No, because I was lucky to be in New York where this was happening. In the 1960s, you know perfectly well the impact of the Oriental world in the 1960s, in the Beat Generation and in so many other. To this day, Philip Whalen or our friend Michael McClure, you know, they are descendants of this issue, as in a sense I am. And I think the Jew in me was very apt and very open to further influences or further cultures, because if we are diasporic, we're constantly in touch with anything and everything, and anything and everything ought to influence your life and your work. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Democracy of the soul. Democracy of the soul. That's a good line. With democracy.
I'm gonna write. Yeah,
yeah,
no, I'm writing that down. I want to write it all down. I'm just glad we're getting it on tape.
You know, something interesting happened to me years ago. It was wonderful. I was in Argentina, and there was this very brilliant journalist who said to me, I want a very intense interview with you, and just you and I sitting alone in this garden, blah, blah, blah. I said, sure, you know. So we got there, and we started talking casually, you know, and we talked, and about an hour after, I said to him, his name was Javier, I said, Javier, let's get to the interview. He said, no, it's finished. He had been taping the whole casual, and that was the interview. And it was magnificent, because I was so loose and so, you know, unpreoccupied with the interview, that it worked beautifully.
You know what happened? A couple of the questions I had written down, about two or three of them, you sort of answered right in the middle of your dialogue.
Yeah, that's what happened.
I had so many different things I wanted to ask you about, but I've just been learning a lot about, like, Nick Norpara and some of these guys. Who would you tell my generation and young people of Americans to look in as far as Latin American poets or to open up their horizons with, say, Latin American poetry or Spanish poetry? Who would be a good place to start?
I mean, obviously, Vallejo, Parra, Neruda are the names to consider, because they've become the classical names. I would add, which is less known in this country, Huidobro, the Chilean poet, Vicente Huidobro. You know, was very involved with France and surrealism and something called creacionismo. To me, he is more important as poet and a seminal poet than, for instance, Neruda.
How do you spell the Chilean poet?
H-U-I-D-O, B as in boy, R-O, Huidobro. And his first name is Vicente Huidobro.
Yeah, Neruda is great, but it's sometimes some of these guys, they become such figureheads that they're not even as...
Yeah, but Neruda is also a lousy poet. You know, he was defined by Juan Ramón Jiménez in the best of all manners. He called him a great bad poet, wherein when he is good or great, he is. The Residencias or the Odas Elementales are unbelievably beautiful. His political poetry is sophomorish to a degree that is embarrassing. And a lot of his so-called serious poetry, it's also embarrassing. I have a theory that some people agree with, which is he drank too much and he couldn't handle drink. One glass of wine is very good for poetry. Two glasses of wine is also good. Three glasses of wine ruins the poem. So there's got to be a control. It's impossible to write spontaneously without a control, without a consciousness of what you're doing, which you normally deal with when you're editing the spontaneous outburst, you know. There's a comment that I hear lately a lot about my work, which is very, I mean, if it's true, I'm an immortal. And people say, you are the only case that I know of someone who writes constantly these long, complex poems, and every poem is good. I mean, I'm not saying this. It would be too much vanity for me to say this about my work, but people are saying it constantly. And there's this kind of amazement and sense of monstrosity about what I do. Now, being prolific is not the issue. I have the feeling that most poets are extremely prolific. You live to write. And if you live 70 years or 80 years, you're going to live an opus that is large. To improvise an example, both Amalio and Paul are not obviously as prolific as I am. Yet I am sure that between what they have already written, and in both cases, I admire the quality of what they have done and how different their work is. Possibly compared to what they're hiding from the reader, what's in there, hidden in the bathroom or whatever, I'm sure that one day when they, you know, go, when they die, a lot of work is going to show up. We all keep material aside which we do not consider part of our work, because we are still infested by a false romanticism that says, and I've gone through this endlessly, oh, Kozar couldn't be a good poet because he writes too much. Quantity is the enemy, and I say quantity is my best friend. It's part of my experiment with poetry. It contains my failures. It contains what I have not seen well or achieved, but it allows me to, in a Confucian way, to constantly review and redress what I'm doing. What's wrong with quantity?